there were subtitles the entire
time. Was that obnoxious?
Yeah, I... But
is that for the blind people?
Yeah, subtitles are for the blind people.
Yep, it's Braille. You have to sit on the front row.
Very astute.
I was kind of like turned off by like the lesbian like push until the scene in the bathroom.
The lesbian scene.
Oh my goodness.
That part really got me going.
Oh my goodness. Andy, that is...
The Supreme Court today was saying you could go to whatever bathroom you identify as today, just today.
You know what, Andy? Use that to your advantage.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because whichever one's open, you just go in, and if anyone questions you, you say, did you just assume my gender?
Can I say one thing before I forget? Dang it, I forgot. I will say my progression of gayness is gone from one level to another level.
Andy, come on. Get your finger out of your nose.
Welcome to TWIM. It's Seth, Andy, and Ben. We're two brothers and a cousin who discuss all the movies in wide release, starting with this week, next week, and last week. Let's start with what's coming out this week. First is Godzilla, King of Monsters. Currently rated 57% on Rotten Tomatoes. I just played a clip from the trailer for Godzilla, King of the Monsters. This looks like it's going to be a CGI spectacle. I'm kind of excited for it.
Yep, lots of explosions.
I wonder if Godzilla is going to win.
Not so much explosions, but I'm not really familiar with Godzilla, but I guess he can shoot like a really powerful Captain Marvel style laser beam, like energy pulse. I guess that's his power. He's kind of like a dragon. He breathes not fire, but these like energy blasts.
I think that's an Avengers thing because that's everywhere now.
Do you guys?
I guess in all the Avengers movies.
Do you think this is a Japanese invented thing, that the Godzilla?
Well, that's where it started.
Isn't it? Don't Japanese like love big monsters?
Well, I think Godzilla, I thought the first one was a Japanese movie.
Yeah, with like a man in a rubber suit.
Yeah, over like a miniature village.
Are you guys serious or joking?
So the original Godzilla movie was 1954. It is Japanese. Ben, I didn't realize this. Godzilla is part of it has a connection to Marvel. I didn't know that.
It does?
Oh. Yeah. According to Wikipedia, Godzilla has been featured alongside many supporting characters. Godzilla has also fought characters from other franchises in crossover media, such as Ellipsis, Marvel Comics characters, S.H.I.E.L.D., the Fantastic Four, and the Avengers. Wouldn't that be cool if Godzilla was the next... He took over Thanos' role as the next villain? Yeah.
He's the new Thanos.
That would be so cool. Well, yeah, like the next generation. Yeah.
But wait, is Godzilla a good guy or a bad guy? Because he sides with...
We don't know.
We don't know, really?
I think that's the twist, because this is the first one where the preview leads you to believe that he may be on the side of humans. Because before, wasn't he just... Actually, I don't even know. He was just out...
Like kind of rampaging through Tokyo and knocking over buildings.
Right. Did you see on Rotten Tomatoes, right now it has a score of 56%?
I think I'll probably like it better because some of the movie, usually when it's like high, I don't like it.
You have lower expectations now.
Yeah. So my screen says 57%, but regardless, that's rotten according to their scale, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that is Godzilla. The next movie out this week is Rocket Man.
Dad is a fat boy from nowhere. Get to be a soul man.
Gotta kill the person you were born to be in order to become the person you want to be.
I'm thinking of changing my name to Elton.
But that's my name.
Yeah, I know.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Rocket Man. It's 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is a biopic featuring the life of, what's his name?
Elton John.
Elton John.
He's British.
He's British,
He is British.
All the greatest are British.
So this is played by Taron Egerton. He's the star of the... I can't remember. We talked about it last week.
Yeah, Robin Hood, King of Thieves, or Prince of Thieves, or whatever the
name
Robin
Hood
is.
What's that James Bond style?
Kingsman,
yeah. Yeah, this will be... I still haven't caught up with Bohemian Rhapsody, so I should probably watch both of... I should probably watch both of those. I'll definitely go see this one. This one is currently 89% on... Did I say that? 89% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm surprised Godzilla is so low already, because these have to be just critics, and then Rocket Man's... 89 is not bad. That's about what I'd expect based on the preview.
Yeah, I mean, it's always critics, though. Isn't the Rotten Tomatoes score always a critic score? And most of these are pre-screened, unless they're, you know, unless they're worried about a really low score. Like Ma, that's coming out this week, it has no score yet.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't screened for critics.
Yeah, that was, I'll bet that was strategic.
Are either of you fans of Elton John music? I mean, definitely his music is memorable. Didn't he do music for The Lion King?
I think so.
I feel like, yeah, that's probably my main connection is from childhood, is just watching The Lion King.
I remember Smith had an Elton John CD he would play a lot, like that Piano Man song.
Well, Piano Man is, that's not Elton John, that's Billy Joel.
Oh my goodness, I'm an idiot. Okay.
Yeah, they do
Thank
seem
you.
Like...
So answer is no, I'm not into his music.
I love Billy Joel, but they do seem kind of similar, huh? Because they're both like just sitting at the piano singing.
Some of my fond memories of Elton John are kind of nostalgically sad about Princess Diana, because he sings that song that was related to her when she died.
Yeah, 10,000 Candles in the Wind.
Is that what it's called? 10,000?
No, that's the Parks and Rec ripoff. That's the spin when little Sebastian died. No, yeah, that was okay. Yeah, that was a good song, Candle in the Wind.
Yeah, I just, it was really sad when she died.
Okay, I'm gonna play a clip from Candle in the Wind. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind. And now I'm gonna play a clip from 10,000 Candles in the Wind. You take a running leap and you learn to fly. Okay, and that is Rocket Man. The next movie out this week in wide release. The only other movie out in wide release is Ma.
Excuse me, can you buy some booze for my friends and I?
Not interested.
Please?
Heel. Ooh, there's my girl. This never happened, okay?
Thanks again for doing this, ma'am.
You guys want to party like rock stars? Follow me.
Let's get drunk!
The bar is open.
What do you think?
We don't know this chick.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Ma. This is a horror movie. It's not yet scored on Rotten Tomatoes. It's starring, I don't know why I start a sentence when I don't know how I'm going to finish it.
Okay. I'll guess what you're going to say.
Octavia Spencer. Starring Octavia Spencer, who befriends a bunch of high school kids and lets them get drunk in her basement.
But she's really like psycho.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. In the trailer, like it seems like she could be calculating. And,
right.
And she has orchestrated this whole thing as some kind of payback for some old college friend or something.
Yeah.
You know, like.
That's what it looks like to me, too.
So she could be a sociopath or a psychopath, but she could just be just evil and calculating.
So did you see on the cover it says it's from the producer of Get Out and Happy Death Day? So I don't know how many producers they had, but they're pretty proud of that producer being involved.
Yeah, I mean, once we talk about Brightburn, I'm really skeptical about the role that a producer has at all in a movie.
Right.
Because, you know, like the writer obviously matters, the director matters. I don't know if the producer matters at all, because when we saw the previews for Brightburn, weren't they touting the fact that this is a James Gunn produced movie? But yeah. It wasn't written or directed by him. I guess it was his brothers that don't have the brain power that he does. And so I don't know if a producer means anything. I mean, isn't that the person that bankrolls the movie? Not so much.
I don't even know anymore, because there are so many producers. Then there's executive producer. And I'm sure all of these are, there's some committee making a lot of decisions. And who, I don't even know.
So according to Google, a producer is the person who oversees the film production. So that's probably like...
That's vague.
Yeah, it's probably like very high level, you know, not in the actual production itself, but in just kind of getting the product. Because I feel like the director and the writer really are responsible for the art. And the producer is more like the person, you know, getting the money and cast, you know, help. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like all the other stuff involved.
I think it depends. Okay, I'll give you an example. The best shows that I've ever seen, some of the best were written by, I guess I don't
British.
Know. Is J.J. Abrams British?
I don't know.
I'm sure he is, because Jesus is.
And... I just want to fit in with your theory.
Wait, no, yeah. Sorry. He was born in New York City.
No, I hate him.
But his parents are British. I'm sure his parents are British.
But I don't know if he was it says he's an American filmmaker, and some of the things that he's made are Star Trek, Star Wars, and that was my favorite one, Force Awakens. And
yeah.
I think he also made Lost.
Yeah.
Or I guess he was a co-creator. So anything I ever see that he's in, I get get really excited about, but I bet they do that sometimes where they throw his name in there when he actually didn't make the film. You know, maybe he did something.
Well, right. Well, all of these.
Well, wait, why?
They want to make some money.
But why did you bring up J.J. Abrams, Andy? Is he...
Because we were talking about... Ben had brought up who had made those other... a guy who had participated in the making of Ma. So I was just giving an example.
The producer.
Yeah, I was trying to distinguish between like the filmmaker, producer, banker. You know, there's all these different roles. And sometimes...
Yeah, but J.J. Abrams is a director, not a producer.
I know, but I guess what I'm saying is he may be used in other films where he's not actually the producer. He may he may like advise on it, and so if they throw his name in there, it might not carry his artistic weight. I was just kind of raising that idea.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure well, it is.
That's exactly what happened. Go ahead, Ben, and then I'll.
I'm just saying. I'm sure when they're marketing the movie, they're like, "Oh, what can we put on the cover and tell people to like help sell tickets." Right. So like, oh, any famous movie you were in or great movie, we're going to put your name on it or that you were involved with.
Andy, that's exactly what happened in Brightburn. It was written and directed by the Gunn brothers, but not James Gunn. So James Gunn directed all these really funny horror movies back in the day. He married Pam Beasley from The Office. They got divorced, but then he did the first two Avengers movies, and then he got fired over an old tweet from like 8 years ago. And then they announced they were rehiring him for Guardians of the Galaxy. I said Avengers before. I meant Guardians of the Galaxy. So he directed those. So when Brightburn came out, they said from the producer of Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn. But James Gunn was not involved in writing or directing Brightburn. And Brightburn, we'll get to it here in a second. But
Let's
okay, just go with
let's
it.
Hit it hard. Yeah.
Brightburn is probably the biggest disappointment so far this year.
Yeah.
For me.
Serious.
It totally was. I don't know. Well, sorry. I don't know if it was the biggest disappointment, but that was just too bad. It could have been such an awesome movie.
Okay, now that we're talking about Brightburn, I'm going to play a clip from the trailer for Brightburn.
Whatever you've done, I know there is good in you.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Brightburn, and here is our review.
I totally agree with you. The previews were really compelling, super interesting concept. But yes. I feel like it was just they had great actors, they had a great premise. It was just lacking in. I'm trying to figure out what was wrong with it. Why did it miss the mark so bad?
It was, yeah. I mean, yeah, I totally agree with you, Ben. The concept, they get an A for the concept or premise, whatever you want to call it. It's a really great idea. The idea of Superman who is evil. That's like such an interesting, compelling idea. Where can they go with the story? Well, it turns out that this boy who has two loving parents, there's nothing that shapes his character to make him evil at all. There's nothing to explain him suddenly becoming evil. He just snap like it doesn't teach it. It just doesn't match with human. You know, they could have really developed his character. Maybe had a death. Maybe have him accidentally use his powers for evil.
I think they did explain this. I mean, so the theater I was in, I don't know why, but they had closed captioning on. I don't know if it was a mistake or somebody requested it. So there were subtitles the entire
time.
Was
that obnoxious?
Yeah, I
love subtitles.
I wanted them to, I wish they would turn it off, but I didn't want to leave to go tell them to please turn it off. But I didn't know if somebody requested it because there were a lot of people in the theater. But
is that for the blind people?
Yeah, subtitles are for the blind people.
Yep, it's Braille. You have to sit on the
front
row.
Very astute.
So anyway, the benefit of having the subtitles on is it had every dialogue, it just displayed on screen. So there were like songs in the background and the song lyrics were metaphors for what was going on. And every conversation, it made it really obvious. So it showed the Superman, what was his name?
Brandon. Yeah, Brandon Breyer.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, thank you. So early on in the movie, Brandon's in class and the teacher's up there teaching and he's kind of spacing off. And the teacher sees him spacing off and asks him a question, like, what's your favorite animal or something like that. So his answer was a metaphor for him in the whole movie. His answer was about a type of wasp that tricks other similar ones to raising their young. And then when the young grow up, they take over.
Mm-hmm.
So with the subtitles, it was like really heavy handed, like, oh, okay, this is what the movie's about. He's... So I didn't feel like it needed like a motive. Beyond that, I feel like that was the motive.
Yeah, but Ben, that's so one-dimensional. That is bad writing. I mean, that's, he's not even a character, a comic book character. There's nothing to explain his, it's not, it lacks any like development of his character, you know? He just happens to be this one-dimensional drone from some other planet that's going to colonize Earth. It just, it did not, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. They offered a metaphor that explained it. And it's not like he snapped for no reason. I mean, there's some red glowing orb that caused him to have, I don't know, he was almost
His little spaceship was just, it lacked any explanation. It was just there to glow red, and it wasn't mysterious in a good way. It was mysterious in a dumb, weird way.
Yeah. I mean, it was set up as though it was controlling him a little, not controlling him. It was kind of like, well, what it would put him in a trance where he wouldn't know what he was doing. And then it would give him these motives that he would, for some reason, when he was sober, he would follow through with these motivations.
Yeah.
This is very similar to the problem with Game of Thrones. I don't want to spoil it because I know Andy hasn't seen the last season yet, but
neither have I.
Oh, you haven't?
No. I'm a couple seasons behind.
Okay. Well, just look on Rotten Tomatoes. You see, it's Game of Thrones has been in the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes up until this season. And now it's at like 46.
I saw that.
Like, yeah. I mean, the plot took these turns, which aren't necessarily wrong, but the way they did it, there was no explanation for why a character would suddenly
do what he does.
Act completely like the opposite. Right. There was just no kind of development. That's how Brightburn was. So, it's like, you need to tell me why.
House of Cards did the same thing the last season. They did a nosedive.
Wasn't the last season of Game of Thrones not actually in the book? Is that what you were telling me?
Well, the books aren't written yet. There's two books still coming out, Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring, that George R. R. Martin has just not bothered getting around to writing yet. And so the books are now going to be like a novelization of the TV show, because the TV show like finished faster than the books.
What if he takes it a different direction than the movie?
Oh, he will. He's already publicly stated that the books are going to be different, because there's a part. Did you see like a fire sacrifice, Andy? Have you seen that part in Game of Thrones yet?
Yeah, where they burn the girl.
Yeah, I didn't want to spoil it for you if you hadn't seen it.
I have six episodes left.
Okay, when that episode came out, George R. R. Martin came out on his blog and said the books are going to be different. So,
okay,
yeah, but that was kind of a tangent.
I think Brightburn brings up kind of some interesting ideas, and this is the obvious, but why are superheroes always good, you know, for the most part? Like, I guess that's not true, because there's always a villain.
That's a good point, because Superman's he was just good-natured, and we don't know why. I mean, this kid was just evil, I guess, but we don't... Yeah, it didn't really sell us on why.
But yeah, I mean, don't you think superheroes, though, are just a place for us to find inspiration and... I guess.
Like some kind of a dream.
Fantasy.
It's like some teenager fantasy.
Or when I was driving home from the gym, which was my appointment.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool. You should have invited me.
I know, I should have. I was thinking back to, like, you know, high school basketball, and how I wished that my personality, like mean personality in basketball, had come out in high school, not in my late 20s. And I was just imagining just shoving this one kid to the ground, and how I would have probably made the team. And so I think there's all these fantasies that we kind of escape into with superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I'm not stating anything that's not obvious.
I think what really, the problem with this, well, there were a lot of problems with this movie, but what really bothered me is the preview had all the best parts. And so the preview was so good, but that's all there was to the movie. There was nothing else.
Yeah, it was a good concept. It was a great concept. Ben, what did you think of the gore? Because I found it extremely gratuitous.
Yeah, I had to cover my eyes.
Yeah, so there's a part where a shard of glass goes into somebody's eyeball.
Yeah.
And there's a close-up of them pulling the shard of glass out of their eyeball, and then this blood starts spurting out.
Yeah, that was... It was
that was kind of bad. But then there's another scene where a guy's jaw gets dislodged.
Oh my goodness,
as he's dying. Oh my gosh, that one made me sick.
You're right. It was it was way too gratuitous. They were really focusing on that gore, and they dragged it out too.
If they had just invested a little bit of effort into the character development of this boy, it would have been such a better movie. I mean, I could have handled, you know, I could have forgiven. There weren't, you know, everything else was actually pretty good. If they had just done a little bit of character development, then it would have been a really good movie, a solid movie.
Yeah, I think the editing was, some of the scenes were kind of clunky, and it wasn't the editing. It was like the scenes they chose. Like, for example, they start to suspect like, hey, our boy's a little different. And then out of nowhere, the dad says he's never got cut or bled his whole life. Like out of nowhere, he said that. It's like, well, that was so weird. And they could have fixed that just by that conversation just came across as so weird.
Yeah, that was a good example of stuff all of over telling like that. Of telling you instead of showing you. Like if they just had a scene where, like, I don't know, they're working on the farm or something and he accidentally gets nicked by the lawnmower and then they're all like, wait, I can't believe it. You didn't get hurt. Like that would have explained it, you know? They didn't have to.
Yeah, and the lawnmower the lawnmower scene they had in the movie, in the preview, he inexplicably decides, I'm going to put my hand in the blade. Like that just came out of nowhere, and there was no explanation. It was just like, what kind of kid just decides he's going to do that?
I also thought that the dad was a little bit quick to turn on his son. I don't know, is that spoiling it? Maybe I don't want to go any further with that, but
that was a surprising moment, like towards the end.
Have either of you seen Dexter?
No,
I've seen a couple episodes.
Okay, it's kind of a similar premise.
Whose kids are those?
Mine? No.
Oh, can you hear the kids?
Yeah. Whose kids are... is that your house?
Mika and Sienna have friends over.
Okay.
So Dexter is a serial killer, but they build up this history of like... this narrative and like history of why he's a serial killer. And it's just fascinating. It doesn't seem like they were very good at doing that in this.
Yeah. Right. I mean, in Dexter, isn't it righteous justice?
Yeah.
I mean, basically he takes it out on people that kind of deserve it, right?
Yeah. And the fascinating part is when every once in a while, very rarely, he makes a misjudgment and kills someone that either he lost his temper once and killed someone that didn't maybe deserve it. But the whole idea of how do you decide who deserves it and then
in this movie he was pretty indiscriminate. He tended to take out his rage on just whoever was in front of him, whether they were friend or foe.
Well, it seemed there was anyone who would tell on him. Like,
well, remember this is in the preview, but remember the first time he uses a power on somebody is to squeeze that girl's hand. And that girl went out of her way to be encouraging and befriend him.
Right.
But on the other hand, he takes out his rage on that girl's mom later. And it is a little bit satisfying because that mom had been just kind of a brat.
but she didn't deserve that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, nobody in the world would deserve that. Yeah. Another thing that I was kind of thought was just funny to imagine. How long do you think it took him to go into the restaurant and breathe on the window and make that little logo? Like 400, he probably had to be there for like 2 hours making those little logos before he did his attack.
That was, I thought the same thing. Like, okay, he's sneaking around. Is like, hold on, I'm gonna carve my little logo
signature
like 4,500
times. That was kind of a kid thing to do. Because Andy, when we were kids, I remember you would draw these like designs, and maybe this is how you got into art. But your art was always like kind of symmetrical designs and stuff. And that's how this kid in Brightburn he would doodle in his notebook, just making this like. The signature logo icon thing, and it would just do it like over and over and over.
Yeah, but that worked in a notebook, because like if you're in class bored, that totally works.
It worked in a notebook.
It doesn't work while you're stalking somebody.
In a restaurant, yeah. I also liked the version of supervillain porn where they find like those pictures under his mattress.
Oh, of like guts and stuff.
Well, at first it's like a girl in like a bra and underwear. And they're like, is this his idea of porn? And they keep flipping through it and it's like, suddenly it's like internal organs and stuff.
Yeah.
And it just gets kind of dark.
See, yeah, they had all of the elements. It just wasn't executed.
Yes. Just a little bit of court character development for him. Like a little bit of explanation of why he turned bad, even though, like, if you're gonna make him one-dimensional, fine, but that's just bad writing. I mean, it just is. One-dimensional characters is bad writing. And that's
just
what
too bad. So do you agree with the Rotten Tomato score?
I think it's high. 57% seems high to me.
Yeah, for what it was. Yeah, it's, I would put it 40s.
Yeah, me too. I'd put it that. Maybe
45. Audience score is almost 70%. Yeah. How do you account for that?
Probably teenagers.
Well, I think if I hadn't seen the preview, I would have enjoyed it more. But the preview was, it sold you on something really good.
Yeah, it was too ambitious of a concept to just, you know, and you know, it just ended up being a wet fart. But it was such an ambitious concept.
It wasn't that bad. It was just...
I don't know. Yeah, my hopes were too high. I think you're right. Like, I expected something much better than what it ended up being.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, anything else to say on
Brightburn? Do you think there'll be a sequel?
They did set it up for a possibility of a sequel. Yeah. Yeah.
That is really common, though. I feel like almost every movie set up that way.
Every movie does. Yeah, they leave themselves an opening. Did you like the way it resolved, Ben? Did you find that, like, narratively satisfying at all?
No.
It definitely wasn't a happy ending.
You know, you know what I was thinking afterwards is... Okay, I have a lot of complaints, but towards the end there was a dream sequence where she gets him out of the little spaceship the way Superman begins, and I was wondering why didn't they show that at the beginning of the movie as a real sequence so you had some context in.
I mean, didn't we know that though? Like before the movie started?
I don't know.
Like I feel like we already, it's like it's a Superman story. Like we know that going in. This is just Superman. They just kind of fast forward it because
yeah, but the dream sequence they showed of that scene, it made no sense to have like it all gory in the way like her I want to say Elizabeth Banks.
That's her name.
It's anyway, it's just too bad. Oh, sorry. What I was going to say is I was thinking afterwards this would really work as a book. It didn't really work as a movie.
Yeah.
So I think on paper, really, you know, it would be really good.
I think this would really work as a movie. I think it was just poor execution. I love the concept of a movie. And then in the sequel, they can bring in a hero, you know, or something.
Yeah,
you know,
the real Superman. Cool.
Or something like that, yeah. Okay, and but Andy, you were going to say something.
Do you think it's, I don't know if you guys remember in the early 2000s, the movie... Planet of the Apes came out and it just didn't hit it. And then
it was the worst.
And then someone remade it and it was way better.
Yeah, we talked about that a few months ago. The Rise of the Planet of the Apes. There was a trilogy in the 2011, 2012-ish started.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe someone just needs to, it's a really fascinating story idea. Maybe someone just needs to remake it in 5 years.
Already it needs to be like, remade.
Maybe James Gunn should be like, okay, little brothers, you screwed it up. You spoiled my good name. Let me just get some redemption and redo this movie.
Well, there was a tip early on because the movie was an hour and a half. If it was 2 hours, like I think it should have been longer and had extra content. It could have worked. And it's possible they come out with a Blu-ray that has like the director's cut or something. Because a director's cut could save this.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that is Brightburn. The next movie the next movie from last week came in at number 6 in the top 10. And by the way, Brightburn came in at number 5 in its first weekend out. Number 6 in its first weekend out was Booksmart.
We have to go to a party tonight.
What?
Nobody knows that we are fun. We didn't party because we wanted to focus on school and get into good colleges.
And it worked.
But the irresponsible people who partied also got into those colleges. We haven't done anything. We haven't broken any rules.
Name one person whose life was so much better because they broke a couple of rules.
Picasso.
He broke art rules.
Rosa Parks.
Name another
Susan
one.
Susan B. Anthony.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Booksmart. This is 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics love this movie. I watched so many critics on YouTube just like wetting themselves over this movie. They loved it so much. What do you have to say about it?
I loved it. I was laughing the whole time. It was so refreshing. And I want to be friends with those girls.
Yeah, they were cool. What did you think, Andy?
I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if I had gone alone. Because I went with my brother and I knew he didn't like it. And
what
so
brother?
Michael. I mean, I also didn't like it, but I usually really enjoy movies that are bad and stupid and like if I'm alone. But if I'm trying to entertain someone, I'm always paranoid if they like it or not.
Yeah,
I had a similar experience, Andy. I went with my wife. I made her come with me. And it's really hard for her to go to see R-rated movies. So I had to do some elbow twisting, but I got her to go. And I felt like because she was there, I was a lot more sensitive to the crude parts and the swearing and stuff.
It was really crude.
And it's not really a, it's not, and your wife's very traditional conservative, and I would say, not traditional, but she's conservative. And I would say that people that are conservative values aren't going to maybe love this movie.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of Brokeback Mountain. Remember how critics were just like, they were just like gushing over Brokeback Mountain because it was so progressive for the time. And it was very controversial, but very progressive. That's kind of the sense I got from this movie when I was watching and listening and reading reviews, is a lot of the reviewers were just thrilled that there were these, that it was, you know, it was the opposite of the Bechdel test, you know, where like, I don't think we saw two men talk to each other. It was,
yeah,
it was all women. Yeah, and they were right. Having open discussions about sexuality. They were discussing masturbation, just like openly. The girl was gay, and it was like not the plot of the movie, you know? And so
I will say, can I confess something?
Yeah.
Okay.
You laughed.
I was kind of like turned off by like the lesbian like push until the scene in the bathroom. The
lesbian scene.
Oh my goodness.
That part really
got me going.
My goodness. Andy, that is, oh my goodness. So
okay, you were turned off by the lesbians until you saw the lesbian lovemaking scene.
Well, I guess I
was. And then you were on board with it.
Because they were both so pretty. And it's hard. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm totally heterosexual and I love imagining kissing a female. And so when you see two beautiful women kissing each other.
Oh my goodness,
Andy. It's just totally turn on.
Yeah,
you know?
That's like, oh, well. But like, you didn't like her as a person, but until you saw like the...
No, I did like her. I just thought it was like really, I just thought it was like a little bit like pushing their like kind of like narrative.
Yeah, it was fully embraced, but this isn't too far off of how the kids are now. They didn't grow up in this bigoted world we grew up in.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, and it was fascinating.
I don't know if they're quite like this.
It was fascinating to think about that this might be the new world, because ours was so different in 1995 and 6 and 7.
I remember when Superbad came out. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah.
But that was starring Jonah Hill and Michael Cera. And Jonah Hill was like so, his mouth was just so dirty. He was like, F this, F, like he would not stop cussing. And I remember seeing that movie. It was really entertaining. But I remember being like, man, that kid has got a mouth. Like he won't stop with the F word. And I read an interview by him, and he was like, hey, this is the way kids talk nowadays, you know, kids talk this way. And I was like, no, you talk that way. I don't think all kids talk this way. And now in this movie, which, you know, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but it's starring his little sister, who, what's her name?
Which one is his little sister?
The one you would think is his sister.
Yeah.
The one that most resembles Jonah Hill.
The supporting friend.
Yeah, Beanie Feldstein is his little sister, and she was excellent. I mean, she was just as charismatic and funny as Jonah Hill is.
The president of the school girl?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're kind of talking with the same mouth, you know? And I'm like, this isn't... I mean, kids might be... I think kids are more open to, like, sexuality and gay people. Like, they're not totally bigoted and stuff. But I still don't think kids talk like that. I mean, I'm around a lot of teenagers.
I agree
teenage
with you,
daughters, sir. And kids don't talk like that. At least... not where I come
from. I think what I meant, like, I meant like these are closer to the attitudes kids have now. It was refreshing.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you.
I mean, this was like super bad, but with two girls that were like really fun. Like that opening scene where they just come out of their house. They're like going to school. They just start dancing in the street.
Yeah.
That was... like they had this wonderful friendship and chemistry, and it showed all the way through. And they were open with each other about everything. In a good natured way.
That was really beautiful. It just made you want to have a friend like that, where it was really cool.
They were real, and they felt authentic, and it was, you know, I was like rooting for them.
Do you know what? Okay, I got this nugget of information from another reviewer. I wish I could give him credit. I can't remember who it was. But they said when these two girls were cast for the movie, they were meeting with Olivia Wilde, and Caitlin Dever and Beanie Feldstein were like, well, maybe we should just like move into an apartment for a couple months, like while we're preparing for the movie.
Uh-huh.
And Caitlin was like, can we? And they're like, sure, why not? So they moved into an apartment and lived together for 2 months before this film shot.
Oh, wow.
And you could tell, couldn't you? I mean, you could tell that they were, I mean, you totally bought that they were really good friends and were around each other all the time.
Yeah. It was so fun to watch. It was so refreshing. And like the preview had lots of like jokes and stuff, but the actual movie was way better. The jokes were better. Yeah. They landed better. And you know, sometimes in a movie you can see where they're like they ad-lib and stuff.
Yeah.
I think some of that was going on, but the whole thing just felt authentic. It didn't feel like I was watching a movie. I'm sorry. A lot of those scenes where it should be obvious, but it didn't feel like it. I was really impressed.
Yeah. What were you going
to
say,
Andy? I think sometimes it's hard for me to enjoy something when I'm with someone else and I'm worried that they're going to judge me because I'm watching something that is maybe that's inappropriate. When I stepped away, though, I really...
But it's funny that you would get that from Michael. Doesn't he send you naked photos of himself?
Yeah. Isn't he the...
I guess it's just the big brother that I should be.
You want to be an example for
him. It's not necessarily that I think I am. It's just like maybe subconsciously I think I should be. So it's hard to relax.
Yeah, yeah. Because you've been taking him around with you since he was like 8 years old and you were going to go, you know, you're going out with your friends in high school, weren't you?
Yeah, he was 6 and I'd take him to play Halo till 2 a.m. and now he's 26.
but Andy, it sounded like you're also a little bit bothered by the preachy liberal agenda.
I don't know, because I also could I could feel what Ben is saying. Like, it was really like they're dancing, and I really don't have anything against lesbian people. I just felt like at times it was a little bit like the opposite of like breakthrough. Do you know?
Well, yeah, I think there
until the love scene.
There could have been some of that, and I mean there certainly was some of that. Like, they were trying to tell that story and feature those people, and like Seth pointed out that a lot of the reviews were maybe enthusiastic about the situation rather than, you know, the quality of the movie. But I don't know, it's been a few days since I saw it, and I keep thinking about, this is a really good coming of age movie. I think it's a type of movie in 5 or 10 years you're still gonna like talk about, and it's still quotable the way Superbad is.
It can definitely be a classic.
The kids, like, let's say you're in high school now and you see this movie, I think it could really be a classic movie that is like, the coming of age movie for that period.
It was kind of like one of those Hallmark movies where you're with some people and you're watching it and you like think it's so stupid, but you both don't want to leave. I think that's how it was for us. But I will say, I want to justify something. That love scene, I can explain why I liked it, is because she had just been shattered. Her world had been shattered. She went in there and that was that raunchy girl that's really sexy and raunchy. And she starts yelling at her and like, you're just a brat.
She's a 90s Liv Taylor. Liv Taylor, right?
Just the tension.
I don't get that reference.
The tension that built in that room, because she was just chewing her out. You're just like a brat. You're so mean. And then all of a sudden she walks up to her and it was this build up. And they're mad at each other and she starts kissing her. And it was just so, so intense. I loved it.
Yeah, that was.
That's such a movie trope, though. Have you ever seen two people fighting, yelling at each other, and then immediately that turns into sex?
Yeah.
That happens all the time in movies, and I've never seen it in real life.
That's true.
It totally was.
That's true.
Sorry. I meant to say Liv Tyler. She was the girl in Armageddon.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She looked, because when she first came on screen, I thought, that can't be Liv Tyler. Oh, she still can't look like that.
Lord of the Rings girl.
Right. She did look a lot like a Liv Tyler, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you guys ever seen a bathroom where girls and guys go in the same bathroom?
No.
Is that like a thing, or were these girls using the guy's bathroom?
It looked like it was co-ed, but yeah, I've never seen
a co-ed bathroom? Seriously, does that exist? That is so weird.
You know, the Supreme Court today was saying you could go to whatever bathroom you identify as today, today.
You know what, Andy? Use that to your advantage.
I didn't know that.
Because whichever one's open, you just go in, and if anyone questions you, you say, did you just assume my gender?
I did that the other day at Cafe Rio. There was like a line of like 6 like teenagers for the boys' bathroom, and I just walked past them and started opening up the girls' bathroom because it's a single bathroom. And then all of a sudden, this girl walked in, and I was like, "Oh, sorry, I use the girls' bathroom when no one's in there."
because I identify as a girl.
I have to sit. It's a thing.
But okay.
Can I say one thing before I forget?
Yeah.
Dang it, I forgot.
Okay.
My favorite. Okay. There were so many characters to like in that movie, and I really liked the high school teacher because, like, I've been
Jason Sudeikis.
I like the girl high school teacher.
Oh. He thought he was talking about the principal.
He was funny too. No, he was good too. Like, he's an Uber driver, but I just remember student teaching.
I like that.
I remember student teaching, and these kids, we started talking to them, and I'm like this dumb 26-year-old, and they're like, yeah, we love Smash Brothers. And I'm like, I do too. They're like, you want to play with us after school? And I was like, yeah. So I go over there to their house, and I'm playing Smash Brothers, and I'm sitting there and realizing that it's really inappropriate.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, she made some really bad decisions. But it was really questionable decisions.
It was so funny because there's this one part where she's like, she's like dropping the girls off, and she's like, well, wouldn't it be, what would you think if I did go in? What if I did go in?
Wouldn't it be crazy? Yeah.
Would it be crazy?
But, and that was real, wasn't it? Because you do get the sense from teachers that they want to socialize with the kids, like outside of work. I definitely got that sense from Miss Lee's in high school. Didn't you? Like, she wanted to do like a road trip with everybody. Like, she just wanted to be one of the kids.
Yeah, and it's kind of unfair because I've taught before, and as a teacher, you're so like up here, and you can't be a part of the group. And I guess there was a little bit more like leeway with her, because if it was a guy, it would have been way more creepy.
Yeah.
But
I think that part of the movie I thought was, like, that is the most foolish decision she made to go into that party. That was so questionable.
Yeah, obviously. That's why it was so exciting.
Maybe she doesn't care that much about her job.
Maybe.
Okay, my favorite side character, Andy, was this kid, Jared, played by Skylar Gisondo.
Oh, the one that has the party?
This kid, he's a billionaire son. And for some reason, like, he doesn't have any friends, and he's, like, desperate to make friends. And he throws the coolest party on his yacht.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my heart was going out to him. He spent all this money. Nobody wants to be with him. But I was like, dude, you're going to kill it in college. Like, everybody's going to hang out with
easily.
You.
Don't take advantage of him.
Easily.
I don't know why. That kid was so cool. Like, he was just like always upbeat, that nobody could say anything that ruined his attitude. Yeah. I really liked him. What was
his name?
And then in the movie, it was Jared, or the actor.
That's funny you say that, because when we were driving home, my brother Michael was like, you know who was my favorite character in that movie? It was Jared. He starts talking about how he wants to design planes and then invent musicals. Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this did have a lot of tropes. Like, graduation is built up to this whole big thing. It's so important to go to this party. And it's in the movie, everybody waits until the last day of school / graduation to say, oh yeah, for the last however many years, I never told anybody this, but this is who I really am. Like, you waited till the last day like everybody did?
I feel like that was more like the point of view of these two characters, because weren't they really judgmental? Like, one of the gags in the beginning is like, we're not going to tell anybody where we're going to college because we don't want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
But it turns out that because they had this, like, they were sparing everybody's feelings, they didn't realize that everybody else was just as special as they were. They're going to Yale, and this kid is getting a soccer scholarship to Stanford, and this other kid's going to earn a ton of money.
He's like, I'm not going to college, but I did get an offer from Google from whatever, all this money.
Six figures.
And so they're very judgmental. I mean, they when the movie begins, she's very judgmental. She kind of sees herself superior to all these other losers. And then she, as the movie progresses, I felt like that was her character arc, is like actually, you know, seeing and appreciating how unique the people around her were. So I didn't find that like, oh, these people held out talking until this last night. It was more like this one crazy night, these two girls realized that everybody else is actually, you know, they're not losers. And these two girls aren't necessarily better than them. And they're actually like listening to them. Because you see them sitting together, just gossiping about gossiping about Jared and his sidekick girl, Gigi.
Yeah.
That's like, there's these rumors that he, like, his dad hired a sex worker on his 14th birthday and stuff. And as the movie progresses, you see them like launch these rumors or discuss them, and then you see them debunk later in the movie. That happened with a lot of characters. What did you think of Billy Lord, that Gigi character?
The one that was always at the party?
It was really random. Yeah. And I felt like, is she like a well-known person outside this movie that I need to appreciate this randomness?
Well, she's Princess Leia's daughter.
It is? Yeah, I learned that afterwards.
She looks like it.
I don't know. It's like this ongoing gag that, like, who do you know anyone that insane? Do you know of anyone that insane?
Was she insane or did she, was she just kind of like a little bit like strung out?
I don't know.
Spacey.
I don't know. She was just, she was a mess.
Ben, I thought that she was actually pretty funny and she almost stole all the scenes she was in.
I did too.
She was kind of one note, but.
Well, it was a funny gag to keep happening. But I felt like funny, I missed, yeah. I felt like there was some cultural reference I didn't understand or something about yeah. her.
Well, I guess I kind of, I really enjoyed her character, the Gigi girl. I just thought it was,
you did?
I thought it was so funny. She was at every party and like was so cool and calm and just like, yeah, she, they were working so hard to get there and they'd get there.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, how did you get here? Like, it's like, oh yeah, well. I was not a big fan of the drama kids. I don't know why, but I'm going to say something a little bit like, prejudice, but flamboyant gay and transgender people bug me a little bit because they don't seem authentic. They always, at least the way they're portrayed in movies, they seem like they're putting on some kind of show.
Yeah. In this movie, I agree. They were dialed up to the extreme. I don't think the majority of gay people are that like up to 11 like they were.
Yeah. I mean, just at risk of somebody thinking that I'm like anti-gay or something, I'm just talking about flamboyance. It's not so much, I like, obviously I don't care if somebody's gay. I'm totally fine with that. It's the flamboyance tends to be, strike me as a little bit artificial.
You don't feel like it's sincere.
And I didn't really enjoy it in this movie. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it worked, but I think I understand why they were so turned up. Like everyone was their stereotype and like dialed up. And that's kind of how high school was. Like you put people yeah. in these groups. So I think it made sense from that perspective.
You know what part I thought was so funny is when she's not going to make it to the graduation. And Jared goes up to the principal and is explaining that he's going to speak for her. And then he's like, yeah, right. She's not going to let you do that. And then he says, well, she told me to tell you that sometimes in the Senate, this person, if they're absent, he's like, oh, yeah, that was her. You can speak.
That was really great. Yeah.
Do you think that that girl's really lesbian, or I wonder if they're just playing a part? Like Heath Ledger wasn't gay, right? But he played a gay person, so I was just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. This was.
I don't either.
You know, despite the, it was crude, but it was also really heartwarming, and I feel like it deserves a way higher rating than it's gotten on Rotten Tomatoes.
Higher than 98%.
You're talking about the.
Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong.
You think it should be 99?
Oh, I'm sorry. I looked at the wrong one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean,
but Brightburn basically outperformed it, which is, that doesn't make sense.
Oh, at the box office?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of weird because Booksmart was such a better movie.
And you know what? I tend to like, so me, my brother and Michael and I were sitting there trying to decide between two movies. It feels like maybe why it outperformed is because the superhero movies are really in right now. But we were sitting there looking at, okay, this is like a teenage coming of age, nothing extraordinary, just like regular things that happen in teenagers' life versus like a superhero movie. And we both chose the coming of age. Like it's more interesting to me, like real life to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brightburn, aren't you getting a little bit of superhero fatigue anyway? Unless it's going to be something excellent like Avengers. Like,
yeah. There's going to they're going to have to switch up superhero movies. It's like they're going to have to change up the tone. The way The Dark Knight changed up the tone when it came out.
Wait, one question. What did that really cute girl give her? She gave her a piece of paper, but I didn't know what
her I thought it was a phone number.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But she happened to know where she lived and gave her her phone number. Anyway.
Yeah. That scene was so funny how her best friend's like in the window behind, like cheering her on and like making all these animations. That was so funny.
I did like that.
Because you could feel like she was so happy for her.
I will say I've my progression of gayness is gone from one level to another level. Like I was really like really uptight about it because I served a mission with men, and then after, you know, they have rules in the book like don't sleep in the same bed as each other and you're with each other 24 hours a day. And then after my mission, my 2-year mission, one of my companions told me he was gay and it made me really uncomfortable and I didn't want to talk to him. And then fast forward 10 years later, I feel like I want to be more like accepting of people and just like treat them just like I would treat my little niece. Like, oh, how's your boyfriend? You know, I want to say, oh, yeah. I want to treat them the same way. But it's taken me some time and it's a cultural change.
Yeah. Well, Andy, you're not the only one. Tons of people went through those same things and made that same evolution at the same time.
I mean, we're kind of...
is a cultural change.
We're kind of like our grandparents. Like, I remember my sister, probably 25, 30 years ago, well, 25 years ago, had her hair done all in like braids. And she went over to my grandma's house and my grandma's like, you look like a little black girl. Take that out. You know?
Oh, jeez.
But what I mean though is like...
It keeps evolving.
In a way, we're like them with the social... They were that way.
Yeah.
So we're like kind of like our grandparents. We're like learning a new way to be accepting.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not even start questioning my stance on gay marriage until about 12 years ago. But before that, I was totally anti-gay marriage. I'm like, well, it's immoral. You know, that was just it was immoral. That's the way I saw it.
Right.
And now I can't even understand how I saw it that way. I know. You know?
You know,
isn't that crazy? Like, yeah.
You know what the best, after doing this podcast for so long, the best line of any movie I've ever seen was in The Green Book, when the black character and the white character, the white driver, the black guy gets caught by him with his gay lover in prison.
Right.
The next day, the black guy's embarrassed and saying like, oh, you know, yeah. I didn't mean for you to see that. And then the white guy's like, hey, I'm from New York City. Things are complicated. And he doesn't.
I know. I love that.
I love that because that's how life really, really is. Everyone's life is complicated and it's possible to judge.
Oh, yeah. You pull back the curtain on anybody and you're going to find all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess like the older you get and the more you mature, you start to realize that everybody's got like demons and you just have to like, I don't know. I mean, you just have to realize that people are human and life's complicated.
Yeah. I liked it because sometimes people try to tell you, oh, you're okay or you're not okay, but he just goes, hey, life's complicated. You know, I don't judge you.
Yeah. It's that brute wisdom. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to force us to move on now. That is Booksmart. We're done. We're not talking about it anymore. And the only other movie out last week that came in at number one is Aladdin.
Oh, great one who summons me. I stand by my oath, loyalty to wishes three.
I'm kidding. Watch this.
Watch out!
I just played a clip from the trailer for Aladdin. This is 58% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is Disney's live-action remake of the beloved classic. I didn't see it, so you guys can tell me, is my childhood safe?
I didn't see it.
Oh, you didn't?
Okay, Ben.
Okay, so then I'll just do my own monologue. So okay. Seth, just now, did you see Amber texted us?
I did. Yeah. So, I saw what she said.
So Amber just texted and said, just saw Aladdin and it was my favorite movie of 2019. So good. So please tell me it will get some coverage in this week's podcast.
little bit of coverage. Yeah.
I thought it was good. I'm trying to think about like who's the audience. Like, is this can be a little kids movie or is like a teenager movie or an adult? And I don't think it really fits in any of those categories, but not really in a good way. It's just kind of there.
Don't you think it was tapping into the nostalgia of people our age and then also an introduction to the character for like younger
viewers?
Yeah,
for sure. And I also feel like it wasn't, it's like, to me, I feel like, okay, my kids are too young for this. And then I'm like, for me, I'm like, okay, I'm too old for it. You know,
so the initial reaction to this movie from the trailers about Will Smith as the genie was extremely negative. People were totally weirded out by it.
Yeah.
But having read a bunch of reviews, it seems like people loved Will Smith as the genie, like that he delivered about as well as you can for Will Smith. You know, he didn't from what I heard in the reviews, he wasn't. I'm just saying this because Amber said this. She said, I think Will Smith was the most amazing person to play the genie, which is kind of a funny thing to say because the genie is almost synonymous with Robin Williams.
No, that's the thing.
Robin Williams, like,
when we talked about this last week, I was thinking about it all week, and I haven't seen it, but I was thinking about Will Smith, and everything he's ever touched is gold. He's like Denzel Washington. Like, he was like amazing in that TV show Prince of Bel-Air. He's amazing in every show he ever makes. I like, and I even like his music. I was listening to his music at the gym today. He does rap. So I started thinking about it. It's kind of like he's like that guy that you can't really count out, you know? He's
absolutely. But there was this, it took me a while through the movie until I could accept Will Smith as the genie. Because I've seen Aladdin a bunch of times, and Robin Williams is just amazing. Almost synonymous.
Like
Will Smith did a great job. It was great, but it's just so hard to redo something that was done so well.
Yeah.
And also his live action.
So, Ben, Andrew, you mentioned Will Smith music, but in the reviews I read, Ben, a lot of people were criticizing his ability to sing and carry a tune.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What's your feedback? How was that?
Yeah, it wasn't, I think it's just not his style. Now, when he raps,
that's
loud talking.
When I say
this
sing,
was more singing.
When I say sing, I was listening to his raps.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you said his music.
But
yeah.
Seth brought up what I was going to point out is that hearing his singing voice was different. It was,
yeah.
I don't think it was bad, but this movie really felt like I was watching a play because it was a musical. They just stop and sing sometimes and there'd be stuff.
Hey, Ben, it felt like
a play.
Ben, don't tell me the spoiler yet. Okay.
Do they get together? Does Jafar win?
We'll never know. No, it was it was enjoyable. It did take a while to get used to Will Smith, and it was, I don't know, it took a long time for me to get used to it. So also you're used to the genie would just, he would move really quick, like in the cartoon, like snap, snap, snap and whip up. And they tried to emulate some of that. And there were a lot of scenes, even dance scenes, where they would speed up the video. It was like 10 or 20% faster than what was natural. So they used that effect to make it more snappy. And they also did some of the scenes where they slowed down the background video. It was really, it was a really cool effect, but.
Oh, you liked it, huh?
Yeah, but it was it felt like more than just an artistic choice. It felt like they're trying to match the pace of the cartoon. That was my sense.
Of the music?
Of just some of the scenes.
Okay, yeah, because people I heard talking about that were saying how it felt so weird that the speed was speeding up and slowing down. And they were speculating that they were trying to match the beat of the music because maybe they weren't matching the beat.
Oh, maybe.
You know, in the filming.
Like the way it ended with this big dancing thing. And their dance moves were certainly sped up. Yeah, maybe it could have been to match the music, but they were like...
Was there a monkey?
Yeah.
No, I think this was... Was there a giant Bengal tiger with Jasmine?
That's in the preview. So I noticed with... this reminded me of when Pirates of the Caribbean came out. It's a Disney movie, but somehow the female lead character, the way they do her shirt is like totally featuring her boobs the whole time.
Jasmine?
Yeah,
Jasmine. I mean, the cartoon is that way too, though. I mean, didn't you get turned on as a 10-year-old little boy watching Jasmine?
I didn't remember. I mean, The Little Mermaid.
She's wearing
a
two-piece.
The Little Mermaid.
Oh,
for sure.
Both of them. Yeah, both of them. Yeah.
But remember how Pirates of the Caribbean? It was. I mean, that's a vivid memory for me. But she's beautiful. But I just felt like the clothes. It's like, I don't know. I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised. But they were. It was a fun movie. I think, Andy, I think you would really like this one because there's nothing to get uptight about, and your parents will probably enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. And it matches your conservative values.
Yeah.
And it features some of the stars from Fox News.
Yeah. Well, and Trump makes a cameo.
I think, you know, I'm not saying that I don't like kind of like bad stuff. I just sometimes...
I know what you're saying. I'm just teasing. the crude can be too much, right?
Yeah, and it's really hard to separate the conservative upbringing for me. I'll always have a sense of guilt no matter what I do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, unless I take a lot of Prozac. Yeah. Prozac really helps.
So I think the people who are going to enjoy this most will be 12-ish year olds who've never seen the cartoon. Hmm.
So was it a good revisit though for nostalgic fans?
Yeah, it was.
Amber seemed
but
to like it.
It also had elements of. It reminded me of when they redid Beauty and the Beast, the premise of her being locked up in there and she has to, it's like, why is this still a story? And so the premise of Aladdin himself is he's just a thief running around. So it was weird to have that, that character in a modern movie by Disney for kids, you know,
this is a movie made for the women of the 90s and 80s and their kids, not the men, right? right? Because I would guess.
I don't know.
Most men.
There was a really strong theme of they kept telling Jasmine like, no, you can't be the leader because you're a woman. That's never happened. So another time they tell her like, you should be seen, not heard. So there was that theme of being reinforced, and she was trying to break through it. Hmm. And the only way that works in a movie is if you know the character is going to break through it instead of just be subverted and silenced.
But it sounds like it's also kind of like updated sensibilities.
Yeah.
Because that didn't exist in the original, right?
Correct. Absolutely. But it worked. It didn't feel forced. It worked.
I heard there was a lot of parkour in this.
What?
You know what parkour is? Where kids run and jump on walls and do backflips and stuff?
I forgot about that. Yeah, in the very opening. So this is kind of dumb. The very opening is Aladdin and his monkey. They're going around, you know, stealing things from people to like get some food. And so Aladdin meets the princess. She's just walking. Andy, come on. Get your finger out of your nose. You know, I tell my kids that all the time.
Get your finger out of your nose.
So let me set this. They set the first impression of the princess. They just set the tone like she's some idiot. And then she like has to work herself up from this like total loser, just total bad spot. So Aladdin is going around stealing stuff. And he can steal something and he can get away from people by like jumping over buildings and walls and stuff. So he's walking around and he comes up to this street vendor. And there's a girl with like a shawl on, and she overhears two kids, like they look like they're homeless kids, saying, I'm really hungry. So she walks over to the vendor, grabs like loaves of bread off the vendor's cart and hands it to him like, okay, there you go, eat it. And the vendor's like, hey, you got to pay me for that. She's like, huh? Well, I don't have any money. Like, really? Like, so she doesn't understand the concept of property and purchasing and transactions and selling. Like, just clues, I don't have any money.
But that is the source material, right? I mean, isn't that what happened in the original?
Is it?
I thought so, yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that. It was just, so that's how you're introduced to her. She doesn't understand you can't steal from vendors.
She doesn't understand basic economic principles. Yeah. Like the most elementary principles.
And maybe they were trying to show that it was the, you know, the social thing. Like, would you steal food to feed your family? Because her defense was, well, they were hungry, you know. So.
Also maybe that she's in such an ivory tower, like just not even part of this like underworld where she doesn't even have to think about like paying for food.
Maybe. I think that act did coincide with her value system, but it was just, it sent the totally wrong message about her ability to be rational.
What I mean her value system, like her value of stealing from people to give to somebody else?
Oh, so I mean as a leader, because she wanted to be the leader and she wanted to unite, I don't know, I can't remember. There was some political thing she was trying to do for the people and make the happy subjects. But
well, I know her from Power Rangers. That's the only place I know her from.
Oh, really?
And she's definitely beautiful. I mean, I do remember she was strikingly beautiful.
Yeah.
And it looks like she is in this too from the clips I saw.
Yeah, she was. It was okay. It wasn't, I'm just trying to figure out who the audience was because it was kind of all over the place, but it felt like a musical actually. So.
Okay. And that is Aladdin. Next, we're going to move on to movies coming out next week. First is Dark Phoenix.
Why did you make me do that?
Look at me. Focus on my voice. I'm not giving up on you, Jean.
She was my friend.
You're my family, Jean.
Stop.
No matter what.
Stop. Stop. Stop!
I just played a clip from the trailer for Dark Phoenix. This is an X-Men movie. This is starring Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones fame, Queen of the North. Just joking. She's not. We don't know.
Yeah, she's not queen. She's a duchess.
I don't want to spoil anything. She's just a person from the North. Sansa Stark. So this looks pretty good, but I've heard that there's a lot of drama about, I guess, like this franchise is going to be done after this.
Oh.
I'm not sure. I heard a lot of drama. I didn't totally follow it, but anyway, I guess a lot of people are down about this movie, but it looks like it'll be a good action fest.
Honestly?
I'm not loving the preview.
Really? This is one of the only superhero movies I have an interest in seeing.
Really?
I don't have any like clues about whether it's good or not, but just kind of like looking at meta information, they did not pre-screen it for critics, and I've heard a lot of negative buzz already about like the production, and so I'm preparing for disappointment.
Hmm.
That's a good thing about preparing for disappointment. You can't be disappointed because you're prepared for it. So,
yeah.
Okay, that it for Dark Phoenix? Okay, the next movie out this week, next week in wide release is Late Night.
Who are you?
I'm a new writer.
A new female writer.
Yeah, I can see that, Brad.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Late Night. This is 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it stars Mindy Kaling and Emma Thompson. Looks like it'll be really funny.
I hope so. I did notice, I can't remember what it was, but in the preview, they made a joke, which is very similar to a joke they've used on The Office. Because, you know, Mindy was a writer for The Office.
Yeah, right.
I don't remember
what the joke was?
No.
Mindy Kaling does have a really just kind of like funny, congenial personality. I like the clip in the trailer where she's like, "You love me." And Emma Thompson is like, "No, I did not say that." She's like, "Well, you didn't say that exactly." But because it reminds me of the scenes with her and Ryan from The Office where like she's totally like living in the stars and like everything he does, she sees some grand love gesture. I thought it was really funny.
Do you guys think she's annoying as an actress?
No.
Oh, I don't find her that, but I could see somebody like feeling that way about her.
She did have a TV show where...
Isn't it still going?
Maybe. She wasn't as good as in The Office.
I watched The Office like every night with my brothers, and my brother Michael always said how annoying she was. I don't necessarily think she is, but it's hard to get that out of my mind, him always saying, "She's so annoying." I'm not that.
Oh, really? Well, she played a character that'd be hard to like in real life.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
Yeah, her character on The Office is kind of funny because in the first episode, she's like very serious and she's like buttoned up Indian. And there's a scene where Michael walks up to her and he's like, "Whoa, on a cookie or something." Oh, yeah. And she's like slaps him in the face. but by the time like they get to the second season, she's totally a different. I've heard her say she's like a caricature. All the characters in The Office are like caricatures of themselves, you know, but she's totally like this valley girl and like obsessed with like, I don't know, makeup and commercialism and romance and stuff. And,
yeah.
So that TV show, Ben, was called the Mindy Project. I guess the last season was in 2017, but it is very highly reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes, 86%.
Oh, that's not bad.
So this movie looks like it's very self-aware of, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Like women, like diversity and stuff. Like Emma Thompson is sitting in this writing room with all white men. And so they hire Mindy Kaling just because she's
a woman,
minority and a woman. Yeah. So they're trying to build their. Yeah. So is Emma Thompson in this movie? Is she like a parody of Ellen?
Oh, I was wondering maybe
because she does kind of have that vibe with the short hair and everything.
Maybe that's what they're trying to analog from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that is Late Night. The next movie out next week in wide release is The Secret Life of Pets.
Oh, part two.
Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Francis is the best veterinarian in the business. You're gonna love him. He specializes in behavioral disorders.
But I don't have a behavioral disorder.
Yeah, I'm fine too. It's my human that's nuts. I mean, you know, I bring her a dead bird, she throws it out. I bring her a dead mouse right in the garbage. There's nothing I do good enough for you, mother!
Okay.
I just played a clip from the trailer for Secret Life of Pets Part 2, and I'm not like a huge fan of the first one, so I'm assuming we're going to get more of the same.
Well, I hope the first one was kind of fun. I was hoping something closer to Bolt.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my hopes were really high.
Yeah, I don't think you can get that.
Yeah, I think the kids will like it, though.
Okay, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. If you want to help us out, the best thing you can do is give us a review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you're listening to. And what's the other thing? Subscribe. So those are the two things you can do to help. We'd love to get some female perspective or any perspective from anybody. So if you want to record a voice memo and email it to us at thisweekinmoviespodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach us on Twitter at @twim_weekly. Yeah, and that's it. So we'll see you next week. Do you have a dating update, Andy? Whatever happened with Lindy?
We went out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we went out with Lindy. We went out last Thursday. We were going to go. So I was probably overthinking the whole thing. And then I just decided to not overthink things. So I just texted her Monday. "Hey, my back's hurt. Do you want to go walking sometime?" And she's like, "Sure." But then as it got closer, I was thinking maybe I wanted to go country dancing. So I'm like, "Hey, text her. Do you want to go country dancing or walking?" And then we ended up going to dinner and just talking. And
oh, good.
I probably made the cardinal sin rule. I got
grabbing her boob.
I got her talking. And I just basically listened to her talk the entire time. So
what's wrong with that?
Like, yeah, isn't that what you're supposed to
have a conversation?
I kept asking about all her ex-boyfriends, and it was so fascinating to hear her stories. Not like I was like jealous anything. I was just, but she was. It looked like she didn't mind sharing. It was just fascinating to hear about some of the things she'd gone through. But,
you know what? Ever since I shared this podcast with Brooke Felix, I haven't seen her at the gym anymore.
You're joking. Did you share it with her?
No, I didn't. But I haven't seen her at the gym anymore. Have you?
Maybe it's because I stopped going.
Yeah, I think that's why.
Yeah, she knows. She doesn't want to go anymore.